What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and in today's episode, we're going to be giving out some end-of-season awards. I nicknamed these the Teddy Awards last year after Wizards owner Ted Leonsis. I feel like he's kind of a staple. If we're going to be doing this award show after every Wizards season, you might as well name it after the guy that, you know, I don't think he's going to sell the team anytime soon. So, you know, name will stay, and it's nicknamed after Ted Leonsis. But this is the second annual Teddy Awards. I'm going to be giving out awards for a lot of different things. Obviously, your typical MVP, Most Improved Player, Rookie of the Year. Wizards actually have four people or players that could go up for Rookie of the Year. But awards like that, but also some fun awards. There's awards like Thank God That Guy's Not on My Team Anymore, you know, Best Trade, Best Performance, Worst Performance, all that type of stuff. So it's going to be some fun stuff too. So stick around for that. Apart from what we were talking about from last year's award show, we really didn't know what this team would be at this point last year. You know, there were a lot of unanswered questions, and I feel like at this point we have some answers. We also don't have some answers. I mean, we don't know if Bilal Coulibaly is going to develop into a guy that can, you know, really pull defenders out and knock down the three ball. We don't know really if Alex Saar is going to be a more efficient player next season. You know, we don't know if Jordan Poole will be a part of this team's core for the future. There's a lot of unanswered questions, but we did get some answers this year. We saw some guys really play well, and for the most part, these are some positive awards. You know, examining, you know, who really stepped up and who performed well. You know, the idea isn't to be negative or bashful of anybody. And while some people will get put down here, it's obviously all in fun and games. So keep that in mind, please. I don't want anybody coming at me. I already had Kari Kuzma come at me, even though I really didn't say anything wrong or anything malicious. So I understand firsthand that people could take things the wrong way. So I just wanted to preface it with that. But without further ado, we're going to get started with the first award. We're going to go right into it with MVP. It's Jordan Poole. And honestly, I'm pretty sure, let me check. I think I got around 70 responses/quote tweets, maybe around like 100 total replies from my tweet asking you guys, listeners, Wizards fans, my followers, who would be your award winners on your ballot. So you guys all filled it out with the 7 or 8 awards I put on the tweet. And I don't think there was anybody who didn't have Jordan Poole as their MVP. I mean, I could be remembering it wrong, but I really stopped looking at the MVP category when responding and looking at the replies, because it was just a staple and it was the correct choice. You know, there was nobody that came close to Jordan Poole this season from a production standpoint, especially on offense for the Washington Wizards. Nobody came close. I mean, if you could look at stats all you want, and I'll go through them in a second, but I mean, just watching the games. I mean, as somebody who watched all 82, even if you watched, you know, 10 games this year and Jordan Poole played in them, you'd realize that he was what made the offense go. Jordan Poole was the focal point and the guy that everyone keyed in on, opposing teams keyed in on. And that was the difference. Last season, obviously he started playing off ball, but even when he was on ball, he struggled because he wasn't used to teams, you know, making their defensive game plans to stop him. I mean, you're playing with three Hall of Famers in Golden State. You win a title with a bunch of good players around you. You're coming off the bench, and then bang, you're going right into a starting point guard, starting shooting guard role on a team that's not good. You know, it's going to be a really tough adjustment. And a lot of people wrote this guy off, right? And I'm not going to tell them that they were wrong to do so. I mean, people make takes, and sometimes they're right, and sometimes they're wrong. But what I tried to stress the entire season was patience. And I called it as it is. You know, Jordan Poole was awful the first, you know, 40 to 50 games of his first year in DC. Absolutely awful. Took terrible shots, made terrible plays, didn't defend. Literally nothing good, right? He really didn't provide much. But then you saw the switch to point guard. Brian Keefe takes over. He gradually starts to figure it out. And by the end of last year, he's averaging about, you know, 17, 18 plus points per game. You know, 7, 8 assists per game. The turnovers go down. The usage goes up. The points go up. And it's all these things that you're like, okay, you know, it wasn't the greatest start, but he picked it up a little bit. Let's see where it goes. And then this year, it's just a whole new animal. And he started well, too. You know, that was the main thing. He started the season well. He continued that throughout, had some up and down stretches, which is commonplace for all guys. But, you know, I really enjoyed watching him play. I thought he was a way more mature player, a smarter offensive player, a smarter facilitator and initiator of offense. So that's what I really like. The defense got better too. You know, this is a guy that for the first 20 to 30 games of the season was top five in the league in steals per game. He still finished with, what do you get, 1.3 steals per game, which tied Bilal for tops on the Wizards, 0.4 blocks per game, 3 fouls a game, which I think led the team. But again, you know, I liked what I saw from him on that end. He's never going to be a defensive stopper. We know that. But he can at least not be a liability like we had seen his first year. And he wasn't. He held his own. And so I like that end of the ball. But we can talk about, you know, offensive production standpoint. 20.5 points per game. And this is, I can go, I posted this graphic. And by the way, I've been experimenting with making graphics. They're pretty terrible, but they get the job done. You know, they're nothing special. But I compared 2023-24 Jordan Poole to this year, 24-25 Jordan Poole. Points per game, 20.5 this season, is up 3 from last season. Rebounds per game up, assists per game up, steals per game is up by 0.2. He shot better from the field at 43.2%. Better from the free throw line at 88.3%, which is a really good percentage from the line. He's always been a good free throw shooter. But the biggest thing is a 5.2% increase in 3-point percentage. From a 32.6% shooter 2 seasons ago to this past year, 37.8%, a career high by about at least 4 percentage points. And it's not like he's taking less threes, it's more threes per game. He's taking a lot of shots from beyond the arc, clearly the most on the team per game, and he's knocking them down at a rather efficient clip. And now 37.8% isn't, oh my God, this guy's unbelievable, he won't miss. But it's a little bit above NBA average, which I believe is about 36%. And on that volume of threes, you know, I think 37.8%, pretty much 38% is good. That's a volume that or a percentage that I'm you know, fine living with if I'm the Wizards. And so I just really like the way that he matured into that lead ball handler, facilitating and running the Wizards offense, especially when, you know, all defenses were basically, let's not let Jordan Poole score. And, you know, I'll make Alex Saar a shot creator. I'll make Bilal Coulibaly a shooter and a shot creator. And Jordan Poole still found ways to get it done, to score and to do it efficiently. So, you know, I don't see how anybody else can make an argument for someone else being team MVP. It really, you know, wouldn't make much sense if we're being honest. So, you know, shout out to Jordan Poole because, you know, he had a lot of doubters. He had a lot of people coming at him and basically, you know, writing him off the second he got to DC and the second he started struggling. But, you know, for him to put in the work, and he seems like a gym rat. He seems like he loves the gym from his accounts, from everyone else's accounts and interviews I've seen. And it's pretty clear in the work and how far Jordan Poole came from game one of the 23-24 season with Wes Unseld Jr. at the helm to, you know, now Brian Keefe has unlocked him at point guard and he's clearly the best player on this team. And it's not like it's hard to be the best player. You got a bunch of young guys figuring it out, but he was. And you know, honestly, even more impressive because the game plans are all tailored to him and you know, guys are basically saying, let's make our defense's focal point, you know, Jordan Poole, let's stop him. And he still found ways to get it done at an efficient clip. So, you know, shout out Jordan Poole. Respect the hustle and grind to get back to this level of play at 20.5 points per game. And that's going to be my Wizards team MVP. And what I would say is pretty much consensus. You know, I think it would be unanimous if Wizards Twitter did. Because, I mean, if you got 400 votes, I'm pretty sure I got 100 responses. And I don't think I saw one that wasn't Jordan Poole. So at that rate, I'm going to give it a unanimous team MVP for Jordan Poole. So shout out to JP for having a really good bounce back season. That brings us to Rookie of the Year. And the fun thing about this is, like, last year was Bilal, like, pretty easily. You know, Tristan Vukcevic came on towards the end and played pretty well. He had that game at the end of last season in Chicago where he went off. But, you know, at the same time, it was just Bilal's to run away with. And it wasn't like Bilal had the greatest rookie year, but he showed flashes. You know, and if I compare Bilal's rookie year to any of the three rookies that the Wizards actually drafted this year, honestly, I don't know if he would beat any of them. Is that a hot take? I don't know. But, like, did Keyshawn George have a better rookie season than Bilal Coulibaly? It's quite possible for people to think that. I think Bob Carrington, you know, too. I think Alex Saar had a better rookie year than Bilal. I just, you know, I think they are pretty similar. You know, they showed really good defensive flashes and they have an offensive game that's going to take time to develop. So I don't know if that's a hot take. You can let me know in the comments. But you know, last year was a pretty runaway award for Bilal. This year it's a lot more fun, mainly because the Wizards obviously had four rookies. Now they drafted three, and it's kind of hard to, you know, kind of bring AJ Johnson into this, considering he was only on the team for about 2 months and really didn't play much until the last, you know, month or so of the season. I mean, there was a game where he played 48 minutes. They literally didn't come out of the game. So I'm going to exempt AJ from the award because, like, it's, you know, he would have won it anyway, but not enough time with the team. That leaves, obviously, with the three rookies. And it's hard for me because this was the biggest split on the awards. This and arguably the best trade, I guess, and I'll get to that in a sec because I have a lot to say about that best trade award. But this was kind of where everyone was split. I saw some Keyshawn Georges, and I like that because he had a great rookie year. And mainly, you know, when I asked people why they chose George Rookie of the Year, they hung their hat on defense. You know, this is a guy that, you know, when given the opportunity to take away the best player on the opposing team, did it pretty good, you know, at a good rate and held his own. Now he's got to stop fouling as much, but that'll come in time. I mean, Denny Abdia was another guy who, fouls way too much. Bilal does the same thing, and you see the progression where they get, you know, smarter as a defender. But, you know, I can't knock anybody, you know, taking Key for that Rookie of the Year award. I did not go that way. I would say it was probably about 65% 65% Alex Saar. I'd say about 30% Bob Carrington. I saw about 5% Keyshawn George from Wizards Twitter. Maybe probably more so like 60% Saar, like 35% Bob. But it was close, right? It was close between those two. But it goes to Saar. And that's where I'm going to go with this award. I'm going to give it to Alex Saar. And it's close because, you know, Bob Carrington was phenomenal, especially down the stretch. You got to get more efficient from beyond the arc, obviously. But at the same time, you know, he played all 82 games. He was, you know, a guy that nearly averaged double figure points and was pretty lethal from the mid-range, showed an ability to get to the rim, you know, gave it his all. It's hard to knock that. And I think the main thing from a lot of people who chose Bob for this award was, look, he played all 82 games. You know, I think Alex Saar played around 67. You know, George played around that because he got hurt, but Bub was there. And I mean, you know, Bub's father passed away and he still played the game that night. You know, Bub Carrington didn't miss any time after that. And I think a lot of people were just blown away by his commitment and his perseverance, his effort. And on top of that, you know, a good production for a rookie season. So again, I can't knock any of that, and I understand where those people are coming from. What I can do is back up my decision to give this to Alex Saar. I think he had the biggest burden on him on both ends of the floor, but specifically on defense. I mean, it's not easy the last 3 to 4 years to be a shot blocker or rim protector in DC. You know, just ask Daniel Gafford, just ask Porzingis. Like, those two guys are phenomenal rim protectors, some of the best in the league. But the issue is when all your other defenders are bad for the most part and they get beat on drives, like everything funnels into one guy in the middle. And, you know, those guys can't do everything. And at a certain point, they're going to, you know, foul a lot and they're going to get bullied down low. And you need some more resistance. And so I feel like Alex Saar, while a lot of people are praising his defense, don't understand just how much he had to do on that end of the floor for the Wizards this season. Because the shot blocking was there. He averaged 1.5 blocks per game, which is, you know, tops among rookies. He obviously has to rebound better. You know, 6.5 rebounds per game for someone who's 7 foot isn't good enough. You know, obviously shooting sub 40% from the field for a 7-footer isn't good enough. 3-point percentage for Alex Saar, considering he was about 11% in summer league and about 19% through the first month of the season. You know, for it to be at above 30% is a win. You know, you call that, you know, not a win. You can make fun of somebody for taking that as a win, but he's basically 31% to close the season from three after he literally couldn't make one for the first month. He had a month where he shot 4 per game and was making 46% of them. Like, that's really good for really anybody in the league, let alone the 7-foot center who's still only 19 years old. So I like for people to obviously take the good with the bad like I just did, because yes, he needs to get more efficient. He needs to take it into the heart of the defense and not fade away on layups. He needs to get more efficient from all areas of the floor. He needs to stop fouling as much. He needs to get smarter on defense. Like, you can knock him for all of these, but I think it would be unfair to knock him without mentioning all the positives. I mentioned the defense and the shot blocking. It was there. I didn't mention the short roll passing. When Alex R sets the screen, they kind of push up on the ball handler and kind of trap him. And then Sarr's in that short roll around the free throw line. He's shown such a good ability to find the backdoor cutter with the bounce pass, to find the skip pass for the three, to even drive in and sink that little floater he has. Now, I'd like to make it a dunk or a layup and get fouled because he really didn't shoot many free throws, a lot less than I would have hoped he would at 7 foot. But he's added all those elements of his game. He added a little bit of a turnaround fadeaway that wasn't as efficient, but you saw the mechanics. And then the three ball picked up, and you saw people having to respect that jumper, and it wasn't the most efficient. But again, these will all come over time. But overall, I liked what I saw the most from Sarr. I think he had the biggest workload and the biggest burden put on him on both ends, and I think he made the most of it, obviously comparatively to the other two rookies qualified that I'm qualifying at least for this award for the Wizards. So again, I'm going to give it out to Sarr, and I mean, you can look at stats for this, I guess. I'm not the biggest fan of just like stats-based awards, especially for a team I watched all 82 games of. I'm kind of going by, I watched the team, this is what I thought. But if you want to go on stats, I guess, Sarr, now that Kuzma is traded, was second on the team in scoring with 13 points per game, led the team in rebounds, which isn't the greatest feat at 6.5, but he led the team still. Obviously led the team in blocks with 1.5. So, all things being considered, Bob Carrington finishes the season just under 10 points per game. Keyshawn George closes the season just under 9 points per game. And, Sarr beats them in pretty much every statistical category other than assists. And in some percentages, but again, overall workload burden that was placed on them, what they were able to do with that, I'm going to give that to Alex Sarr. I would put Bob Carrington at 2 and George at 3, but it's not like it's a far race. And this is a good problem to have. You have Wizards Twitter debating on which of their three rookies was better than the other, which deserved to be Rookie of the Year. And it's not because one didn't have a great year and doesn't deserve it. All three are deserving. It's just who played better than the other. And that's a really good problem to have. So I wanted to make that statement too. And you can look into AJ Johnson too, if he had a bigger workload, because he showed some flashes too. But it's a great problem to have if you're an NBA team, if you're an NBA fan base. So I would, some people are getting a little hostile in the comments, which is fine. It's all fun and debate, but I'd also remind Wizards fans to just realize that it's a great problem to have, three rookies that are all pretty much good qualifiers for this Team Rookie of the Year award. But I'm going to give it to Sarr, and hopefully you understand where my rationale is. And I'm already at 17 minutes in this episode, and I'm 2 awards down, so I got to pick up the pace. Defensive Player of the Year. Honestly, I've said a lot of these awards have been, pretty competitive. This, too, was competitive. I decided to give it to Keyshawn George. Again, Alex Sarr was given some consideration here. But again, I wanted to diversify these awards. I wanted to talk about some other players, and yeah, I can talk about Alex Sarr's, shot blocking and rim protection. But I wanted to highlight Keyshawn George because his ability to stay in front of his, of the guy he's guarding is unmatched. It's clearly the best on the team. That's saying something because he plays with Bilal Coulibaly, who's also really good at staying in front of him. As a defender, he's good at moving laterally. These are all things that he's great at too, but just the sample size and what I saw throughout the entire season from George, the fact that he's not afraid to guard up on anybody, whether it's Steph Curry, he was chirping Draymond Green in like his third NBA game. He's fine taking on, assignments like Danny Avdia, but then he's also fine taking on, smaller guards like Curry, and then he can go back on to Cade Cunningham's. He does it all, and he does it well, and he's just so versatile on that end. He can guard realistically 1 through 4. He's got the size at what is he, 6'7", to defend the 4 position, and he's got the lateral quickness and the hands to defend the guards, the 1s and 2s. And that ability to guard so many positions at an elite level is why I gave George this award. And, I think 1 steal game, 0.7 blocks per game, obviously those are pretty good statistical numbers, 1.7 stocks per game. Again, I don't think you can really equate defense to stats. I think you got to watch the games and watch the player. And if you watch Keyshawn George this year, he just had no fear on that end. He took on whatever the, other team threw at him, and he did it well, and he got better progressively throughout the season. So, phenomenal year. I mean, it was capped by that play against Philadelphia when when he was guarding Lonnie Walker. And Lonnie Walker, legitimately, it's not like Lonnie had the ball and going to get by him. Like, Keyshawn was on him like glue when he was off ball. Like, he was trying to navigate through multiple pin down screens and could not separate from Keyshawn George because he was relentless. He was smart. He knew the angles. And eventually, Lonnie Walker threw him to the ground because he was so frustrated, got a flagrant foul. And that's the type of play that kind of, you know, was the cherry on top for me. You know, I was kind of debating. Bilal Coulibaly had a really good defensive year in the beginning part, and it was up and down at some times. But again, he got hurt, and he missed the last couple of weeks of the season. And I was kind of looking for Keyshawn to solidify, okay, you know, I'm the best defender on this team right now. And I saw that play was kind of like, okay, like, you know, guys are really getting frustrated clearly by his defense, his relentlessness on that end and his skill there. And so I had to reward that, wanted to talk about Keyshawn. So shout out to him. I also gave him my most surprising award. There's not really much point to talk about him again, so I wanted to get that out of the way. Most surprising player. I had expectations for George. You know, I tweeted on draft night and I talked about it in my post-draft pod. I liked what they did there at 24 because a lot of times teams will reach for that game changer, that guy who could be, you know, your late round Jalen Brunson. But again, that guy could also be your 24th pick who sputters out in a couple of years and isn't on your team. You know, that could also be the case. And you see that quite often in the 20s and 30s and all that. And especially in the second round, teams are going for that really high ceiling, but really low floor player. And I like that George was a really high floor. It might not have the highest ceiling, but you knew what you were getting. You knew you were going to get elite defensive production from, you know, guarding 1 through 4. And you knew he was a wing that had size and could knock down the three ball. It's a 3-and-D wing that you know could be a staple in this team for years to come. A guy that every playoff team wants. I mean, you look at the Thunder last year, they were like, you know what? We need to be tougher. We need shooting and we need defense. They go to get Alex Caruso, who's a capable 3-point shooter and a great defender. Isaiah Hartenstein, he's a guy that has size down low and can play him with Chet, but he's also a really good defender that has some offense to his game. And so when you take all of those things into consideration, you know, that's an OKC team that clearly Washington is looking at. This is how we build. And a lot of their players, you know, those are guys that they signed and traded for. But a lot of their guys have that they drafted. That was their kind of profile that they wanted. And Will Dawkins stresses all the time, I want defense, I want size, I want length, and I want shooting. And Keyshawn George is all of that. And so, yes, I had expectations for him, and I was happy with the pick. But I didn't realize he would be this good of a defender this early in his career. And I also didn't realize he'd be this capable of a three-point shooter. And 32%, you know, that's nothing to scream about. But as a rookie, it's good. He struggled to begin the year, slowly built that percentage up. Had a couple games, I think, against Golden State, he had 8 threes. So, you know, he's capable of knocking it down. He's got a decent offensive bag, and that'll develop over time. But I expected him to be good. I didn't expect him to be that good. So, again, major props to Key and to Will Dawkins for drafting a guy that, you know, at 24 already looks like he could be a defensive stopper for this team, you know, come playoff time when you really need those guys. So those are a couple of the first awards. I think we're doing good on time right now. I don't want to make this, you know, too long of an episode. That brings me, do I want to do most improved or do I want to go from most surprising to most disappointing? Yeah, I'm going to go most disappointing here, and we'll go back to most improved player because I think you all know who I have for that award, and I can talk about that guy for days. But we're going to go to most disappointing. It's a little bit of a sadder award than most surprising. I'm giving it to Corey Kispert. I don't like doing that because, again, I don't think Kispert had a terrible season. This is an award to say that this player sucks or like this player is not good or we should trade this player. You know, that's not the point of it. It's I had expectations for this player, especially after Kispert signed that extension. And he had a great career year the year before. You know, I expected him to take a little bit of a leap. And that doesn't mean you're an all-star. It doesn't mean, you know, somebody averaging 15, 20 points per game, but someone that's going to get you double-digit points coming off the bench, someone that's going to provide production, you know, at the rim, like he's gotten better at, and be a really efficient three-point shooter because, you know, Corey Kispert came into this league as a specialist. And no team really wants a specialist anymore, especially when you can't defend. You need to be able to do more. And to his point, he's gotten better at defense. And some could say that, you know, he was really bad and he's gotten a little bit better, but he's still really bad. And that's understandable. But, you know, he's shown an ability. He's the best cutter on the team. He's a really smart player, probably the smartest cutter, obviously, on the team. But he's shown an ability to get to the rim. He gets to the rim, and he shields that ball so well. He can finish on both sides with reverse layups and going through contact, you know, right at the rim at the defender. You know, he's added that to his game, and you got to respect him for that. But at the same time, you need to do it efficiently. And for Corey Kispert this season, he didn't do it efficiently. You know, if you look at his numbers, you know, 45% from the field, that's good. You know, when he was, like I said, when he drove to the rim and he was inside the paint, you know, good things typically happened. He usually made his layups. But at the same time, from three, 36%. Like, you say that for a guy like Jordan Poole, 37%. You're like, that's a really good number for that guy. And then you look at Corey Kispert, it's only like about a percentage or two below. And you're like, you know what? I was a little bit disappointed. And I can understand why some people are confused by that logic, you know, understandable. But for Corey Kispert, who's kind of a, you know, a 3-point shooter, you know, you're expecting him to be that guy that stretches the floor for you. You need him to do it more efficiently, quite frankly. And he didn't do it this season, especially after the year before where he shot, you know, 38%. The year before that, 42.4%. You know, he's a capable 40%+ 3-point shooter. We've seen him do it. It's just a matter of getting that percentage up, and you don't like to see that when it's down 2 years in a row. You want to see it going the opposite way. So not to say that Corey Kispert had a bad year or that, you know, again, that he sucks. No one's saying that. But again, would like to see that 3-point percentage go up a bit more. Would like to see more production efficiently at that from Corey, especially when you consider, you know, he's not a liability on defense. I don't want to go that far, but he's not a plus defender by any means. And it's not a lack of effort, but, you know, teams look at him and they look to exploit him on that end of the floor. That's just kind of how it is. And, you know, if that's going to be the case and I'm the coach, I got to know that you're going to be able to make them pay on the other end. And he just didn't make them pay enough from 3-point range this season for me to not give him this award. So I'm going to give it to Corey Kispert there with the most disappointing. And I think that was kind of consensus too from Wizards Twitter. I didn't really see many other names. I saw a few Bilal Coulibaly's, and when I asked them about it, they mainly said because, you know, while his defense was there and he showcased ball handling and stuff like that, you know, the 3-point shot and just any type of offensive bag, it needs to be more. There needs to be more efficient 3-point shots, and that's understandable. But I think the consensus here was Kispert, so can't really knock people on the ball take, but I think consensus from Wizards Twitter is Corey Kispert is the most disappointing player. That leaves me to the most improved player award. And I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody, again, is kind of consensus on this. For me, it's the one and only Justin Champagny. I can't, like, I don't know if I have enough time to talk about. This is so exciting for me as someone that in the offseason was screaming at the Wizards to give this guy a standard deal. You know, he was on a two-way contract for the longest time, and then post-deadline they gave him the you know, longer-term standard NBA deal, which is great. You know, I'm very happy for him. But again, I was saying for the longest time, this guy has what it takes to be, you know, an everyday player. He clearly showed that, you know, even before the Wizards had gone out and said, this is the guy that we want here for our standard NBA contract. You know, after we have an open slot, after the Wizards were basically like, you know what, you've proved your worth. He was doing it way before that. You know, it's a guy that averaged a double double to end the regular season. You know, a guy that in college, he averaged like 10 and a half, 11 rebounds per game, but he's not the tallest guy. What is he, like 6'5"? He's a wing, you know, guard / forward, can play realistically the two or the three. The Wizards sometimes played him at the four, which I prefer him at the three realistically. But he was phenomenal. He was so good down the stretch, and arguably the last 10 or so games, the most consistent Wizard. And I don't really think that's saying anything outlandish. I mean, this is just his last five games. 15 points, 13 rebounds on 6 of 11 from the field. 20 points, 13 rebounds, 8 of 13 from the field. 14 and 12 on 5 of 12 shooting. 18 and 10 on 7 of 12 shooting. 27 and 4 on the season finale in Miami on 11 of 16 shooting, including the three that led to the Wizards getting a turnover and Bob Carrington making the game winner. It's just, you know, I want to make sure that's not overlooked. That's the guy that was in the G League for a while, undrafted. you know, works his way into the league, gets a standard NBA contract, but it's a guy that had been putting in work the entire year. Earned that standard NBA contract, by the way, and it's just been building ever since. So I can't say enough good things about Champagne, but what I can say is that he's the most improved player. I mean, a guy that last year, you know, I saw flashes, but this season he genuinely looked like a guy that I think should be in the Wizards' core. Like, I think should be here for the long term. You know, I hope that they work out a longer term deal with this guy because he just does it all, and he does it all so well. You know, efficiently. He's a smart player. He defends. You know, it's not like he just entered the league. You know, his first season was 21-22 with the Raptors. You know, appeared in 36 games. Then over the next, you know, season between them and Boston, 5 NBA games, 15 games last season with the Wizards, only 15 minutes per game. And then you look at this season, played about 7 more minutes. He started 31 games, which is a career high for him, obviously, but before the season had only started one, and that was last season for the Wizards. 31 starts, 62 appearances, 21 minutes per game, 8.8 points, 5.7 rebounds, 1 assist per game. 1 steal per game, 0.6 blocks. Like I said, I don't like to equate defense to stats, but there's the stats for you. If you watched him like I did, he was phenomenal on that end. Not going to be your number one or number two option to you know, take on you know, the best player on the opposing team, but he's going to give effort. He's going to be in the right spots for you there. 38% from three, up from 28% last season. That's a huge jump. 51% from the field, up from 41% the year before. Free throw shooting was down a bit, which isn't great. But that's the only blemish on him. He's up basically 10 percentage points from the field and from three-point range. Points are up. Rebounds are up. It's just all of these things are going in the right direction for Champagne. And, you know, it's a good sample size, too. It's not the 15 games, one start from last year. It's a 62 games, 31 starts from this year, especially closing the season with 5 double-doubles, 27 points in the finale. I don't see how you could go any other way than Champagne here. You know, some people said Alex Saar or Keyshawn George from the progression we saw throughout the season. I get that. I personally think rookie should be exempt from this award. It's kind of a year over year, not a individual year. How much did you improve from the start to the end? Because obviously rookies, if you're terrible in the beginning, have a lot more room to grow. But I think year over year, I don't know who else could get this award. So maybe Jordan Poole, and I think a lot of people saw, you know, said that, and that's completely valid. You know, I talked at length to begin the episode about how much Jordan Poole improved in literally every major statistical category. That's what Jordan Poole improved in. So I can't knock anybody with the most improved. I wanted to go a bit of a different direction, maybe more unique, but I really did want to reward Champagne and make sure that he got some recognition for just how great he was, especially to close the season, but consistently throughout all 62 of his appearances. So that's my most improved award there for Justin Champagne. And that brings me to the, thankfully, he's no longer on the Wizards Award. This is an award that goes to none other than Kyle Kuzma. I didn't put this on the ballot. I wanted to reserve some of the more fun awards for this episode for me to talk about. And again, it's all in fun and games, right? You know, it's not because I don't like him as an individual. I don't know him as an individual, but strictly basketball, I'm glad he's not on the Wizards anymore. I thought he was awful all season long, you know, from every asset or aspect of leadership, really. You know, a guy that said he wanted to come to DC and win championships and see this rebuild through. And then, you know, a couple of things don't go your way. You're not, you know, scoring 20 points per game like you used to, and everything's harder. And you're not playing that well. The second that happens, you want to get traded, and you make it known too. Like, this wasn't a quiet exit from Washington. You had the comments after the Phoenix game that basically said, you know, I'm not playing for the development of others. You know, basically saying, you know, everyone here is here to rebuild, and nobody really cares about winning. Yet you signed up for it and then doubled down with it by signing in free agency. Like, you could have gone anywhere. I'm pretty sure Indiana and Sacramento were very interested in Kyle Kuzma. I don't know if they gave him an offer sheet, but I know the Wizards probably gave him the most money. And so if you're going to pick money over competitiveness and winning and all that, don't come back and complain a year later when you are losing and nothing's going your way and you're not playing well and you're making all that money. Don't come back and complain that you're unhappy with how everything's going, with how the team's not winning and how you're rebuilding. You signed up for this, Kyle. Like, you signed up for the rebuild. You knew you were going to make a lot of money, and you signed up for it. And you decided you don't want to be traded last year because you had the option to go to Dallas. You said, no, they're not good enough. They're not a good enough contender for me. I don't want to get dealt there. And again, then you're going to come back a year later and complain that it's not going your way and the team's not winning enough and they're not trying to contend like you thought they would because you knew they wouldn't. And so I really didn't like that. I didn't like how he ended his tenure in DC. I don't think Wizards fans did either. You know, looking at the reactions to him being traded, I mean, I don't want to knock a man while he's down, but the Tony Snell performance he had in his Bucks playoff debut, I mean, he played 22 minutes for the Bucks in game one against Indiana, and he finished with 0 points, 0 rebounds, 0 assists, 0 blocks, 0 steals. Like, he recorded no stats, pretty much. He just had, what, fouls, turnovers, and didn't make a single shot, went 0 of 2 from the free throw line. Like, pretty much as bad as you can be in 22 minutes. And they needed him. I mean, they got Damian Lillard, but they got Kuz, you know, for a third option. And with Dame out, you needed Kyle to step up, and he legitimately did nothing for the Bucks. And so I'm glad that that's not on the Wizards anymore. You know, I don't want to say he was kind of toxic, but you saw, like, the team just played better. They looked happier when he got dealt. They looked, you know, just better as a unit, more cohesive as a unit in their play after the deadline. I mean, the game right after the deadline, it was funny because you had all those people saying, you know, trade Kuzma because you want to get picks or whatever, but it would open up the floor for Bilal. He's holding Bilal back. He's holding George and Bub back. And Bilal Coulibaly gets a triple-double the first game that Kyle Kuzma is out of the lineup and gets traded. Bub Carrington also had a double-double with double-digit assists in that game. Like, everything that Wizards fans kind of said should happen with the Kuzma trade has happened, and it looks like a great trade right now. So I'm glad for basketball reasons that he's not on the Wizards because I thought he was terrible this season. I can go into his stats and his percentages, but I don't think people really care because they watched it. They know he was bad. But also the way that he exited, you know, the Wizards after a couple of years, I really didn't like that. I didn't like how he went out. And obviously his mom kind of came at me, didn't like me. So I'm glad he's not on the team. I'm more so glad that they traded him because they should have done it a while ago. But glad it's done. Glad they got some value, and we'll talk about that value in a second when we get to the best trade. Moving forward, I'm not going to touch on this too much, but my go-go MVP for the Capital City Go-Go is Jalen Noel. I mean, I wanted to at least give a segment to him. He made first team all G League, and I think that's pretty important. He signed an Exhibit 10 with the Wizards, really just played garbage time. I don't know what his future is as, I guess, a relatively older player compared to everyone else that's on the team, but he's got game, you know, and you've seen guys like Jordan Goodwin, I mean, Justin Champagne this year, you know, Garrison Matthews was really the first to be on that two-way deal and then kind of spark, you know, NBA success off of it. And so you see all of these things happening, and you don't know, maybe Jalen Noel is the next, you know, Capital City Go-Go success story. Also, I mean, look at Chris Dunn as well. He's starting at point guard for the fifth-seeded Clippers. He was a go-go guy who really resurrected his career. So, again, you never know what could come of Jalen Noel, but I wanted to give him a shout-out because he was phenomenal this year for the go-go. Moving forward, my Please Get Better at Defense award goes to Tristan Vukcevic, and this isn't even, like, a harsh award. It's, like, genuinely for, like, the Wizards' sake and, like, for my sake and for fans' sake. Your offensive game is so good and your touch is great, especially around the rim. Your three-point shooting is there and it's, you know, a real threat. But you don't play defense. You're also not good at defense. You need to get stronger to play better defense in, you know, on the inside. And, you know, Tristan would be such a massive threat as that backup big that, you know, Sar, if he keeps that three-point shot going as you're starting, you know, 4 or 5. And then you bring in Vukcevic if he's your backup. And that you know, offensive production is still there, the ability to stretch the floor. But again, if he adds defense too, that's a great 1-2 punch, a very young 1-2 punch at that. I mean, you know, what is Vukcevic? 21, Sar's 19. Like, that would be great. And so for everyone's sake, it's not even like a knock on him, but he played bad defense. He's not good at defense. And he just, if he gets better, it opens up so much for the future of this Wizards team and for Vukcevic as a part of that core. So hopefully he improves his defense. That would be really cool to see. Moving forward, the I Wish You Played More award. Rashawn Holmes, shout out to you. Rashawn Holmes was great in his minutes this season. You know, he really didn't play much in the beginning, if at all, because the Wizards had, you know, Sar, Valanciunas. They had Bagley for a good portion of that first part, obviously until the deadline, until he got hurt a little bit before that. But they had a good big rotation, good depth there, and so Rashawn didn't crack it. But after the Bagley trade and when Bagley got hurt even and Valanciunas got dealt, there was more minutes for Holmes. He started a lot of the games, especially when Sar missed about 7 or 8 in a row. And he was great. You know, he brought the energy on both ends, was a double-double machine. And I really enjoyed his production. And he's $250,000 guaranteed. It was kind of the same as what happened this offseason before this one. And the Wizards ended up kind of restructuring it, making it the same contract, but just giving him another year. Maybe they do that again to maybe build his trade value, be a backup to Sar. But it's also possible that they go out and deal him this offseason, pick up the guarantee and deal him. Maybe they just don't guarantee the contract, let him walk. There's a lot of options, but he was great. You know, a guy that whenever his number was called, produced, and I wanted to make sure that was shouted out. So major props to Rashawn for the wish you played more award. The I wish you played less award. We have our first 2-time winner, I guess second because George won too. But joining the 2-time winners is none other than Kyle Kuzma. He is the winner of the I Wish You Played Less Award. Again, his production wasn't there. He was pretty awful in his minutes, and he played a lot, shot the ball a lot, the most on the team when he was playing, and he was not good. Point blank, he was taking opportunities away from a lot of younger guys that I thought not only deserved those shots and opportunities, but it would be in the better interest of the team if they got them. And you kind of look at Kyle Kuzma and the production obviously not being there, the efficiency not being there. I wish he would have played less. And you saw when he was traded and those minutes and shots were open, a lot of guys excelled and got a lot better and showed more flashes. So that's another 2-time winner, but that award goes to Kyle Kuzma. Moving forward, best teammate award. Shout out to my guy Anthony Gill. He is a 2-time winner now of this award, won it last year, runaway winner. I don't really think it's even close. Maybe Jordan Poole could make a case for it for being a good mentor. Everyone speaks really highly of him. Maybe he'll win it if Gill departs this offseason. But Anthony Gill, from all accounts, is just the greatest dude. The games that I've been to, the select few, I've seen him walking down the sideline before the game in warmups and just shaking everyone's hand, sitting down and just talking to them for 20 minutes. Everybody in the locker room just speaks so highly of him. My guy Varun Shankar for the Post did a feature story on him that I thought was phenomenal, and really showed the intricacies of what he does. First off the bench to shake everyone's hand and give them high five when they do well, and also cheer them up when they don't do well. He's always willing to rebound for guys. You don't see the people throw their ego away. You're an NBA player. Usually people are rebounding for you, but he rebounds for everyone else. He knows his role. He understands he's not the star of this team, but he can help in any way possible. And he's doing that as a mentor, teaching all the young guys how to be professionals. So that's great to see on a daily basis. Younger teams need that guy, the older guy that can be a mentor, that knows his role. And so major respect to Gil for showing up every day, being the ultimate professional, being a great teammate. He is now a multi-time winner of the honestly, I'm gonna rename this award. This award is now for next year. Is the Anthony Gill Best Teammate Award because he's deserved it. I mean, he's just been so, so impactful for this younger group. So first award that's named after someone, we have the Anthony Gill Best Teammate Award. We'll move forward to that next year. We'll see who wins it. If it's Anthony Gill that wins his own award or somebody else. But Anthony Gill is a 2-time winner now of the Best Teammate Award. The Tank Commander Award goes to Kyle Kuzma, pretty self-explanatory. What other awards? I think we have one award that I might have missed. Oh, here we go. The worst social media team in the NBA. And this is more of a league-wide award, but it goes to the Washington Wizards social media team. And again, I've mentioned the Wizards social media team on my pod a couple times, and I always preface it with, I don't know if the people running the social media team are being told to not post final scores or end-of-quarter scores or anything like that until when they're irrelevant or so much time has passed that nobody really cares, so no one sees how bad the team is. I'm at the point where that has to be the case because there's just no way that a team is paying people to run their social media teams and be this late to a lot of major news and score graphics and stuff that should be timely posts that aren't. And so I'm at the point where I think that's the case. So that's why I'm prefacing with this. But they were just not fun, pretty bland the whole season. Like, I went through it in another episode, but it's, you could map out the entire game day schedule of content and posts for the Wizards. You know, you have your fit posts, you know, your fit check posts before the game, you know, where to watch, it's streaming on Monumental, you know, 30 minutes before the game. Then you have like a game time post, you know, they post a couple clips from the game. It's pretty generic captions. But again, they post them like 3-4 minutes after they happen. Like there's a place where like Bob Carrington, this is actually hilarious to me. Bob Carrington made his buzzer beater at the end of the Miami Heat game at 3:15 p.m. On April 13th. The Wizards posted the video of him making it at 3:35 p.m., 20 minutes after Bob Carrington made a buzzer beater to end the season. Pretty big, noteworthy play. The Wizards social media team waited 20 minutes to post the clip. How does that happen? Like, I don't know how long it takes to clip things, but I would assume maybe 30 seconds to a minute and then upload it, put a caption. Not that hard. Their caption was Bob Carrington with a million exclamations, like in all caps. Not a lot of thought goes into that. How are you waiting 20 minutes to post the video? What are we doing here? Like, if fans that are watching the game want to know. They want to see what happened. Not just that Bob made the buzzer beater, which they tweeted right when it happened. They want to see the video. And you wait 20 minutes to post it. Like, what is going on here that I'm not following? Because if I was in charge of social media and the intern or whatever didn't post this for 20 minutes, I'd have a hard time keeping them on. I mean, this is your job, to get videos out, to promote the team on social media. People want to see this. And you wait 20 minutes to post the video. And now there are, you know, a bunch of other sites that posted the video. And so you can find it if you're, you know, willing. But if you follow the team account for this type of stuff, which most people do, you don't wait 20 minutes to post the video. Point blank, you don't. And they did. And I just don't get it. You know, I don't know why it takes them so long. They have to be mandated, but it really baffles me. And then you look at the final score. Again, 3:15, give or take, is when the game ends. The Wizards posted the final score at 4:03. Like, that's nearly an hour. What is that? 48 minutes after the game ends, they post the final score when they win. Like, what are we doing? I mean, the top comment, you know, people tweeting every 20 minutes. You know, it's just, why are you waiting this long to post the final score graphic? That should be ready and waiting and posted no more than realistically 2 or 3 minutes after the game ends. You know what the score is. Nothing changed. You have your graphic ready. Post it. It's just, it's all these things. And when their team is bad, it's these things kind of compound you. If you're a Commanders fan, you saw with like Dan Snyder, you know, all of these things would happen where like if a railing falls at FedEx Field, you know, it's a way bigger story than if it falls at the link, because it, you know, stuff like that doesn't happen there. But it's more noteworthy when you look at all of these things are going wrong. And for the Wizards and their social media, you know, your team's already bad. But again, it's convenient. A lot of people pointed this out. The Wizards don't post the score after the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter until the next quarter begins, so that the graphic is now irrelevant. And I would assume that's because the team is bad and they're usually losing, so they want to make sure that, you know, by the time they post it, it's pretty much an irrelevant graphic and irrelevant post, and nobody cares anymore because the quarter has already started, the score is already different. But again, you should have the graphic ready, you should have someone ready to put in whatever the score it is at the end. The tweet should be ready and you post it. It's not hard. It should be up no less than 20 seconds after the horn sounds, after the first, second, or third quarters. But the team strategically does it that way. And I'm only speculating, but there's no way that this isn't true. They do it that way, so it's an irrelevant graphic and nobody really cares at that point that the team's down 15 plus points after each quarter. And I don't like that, because your goal as the social media team isn't to put out this propaganda bullshit. Sorry for my language. It's propaganda bullshit to make it seem like the team doesn't suck when they do. It's annoying. It's disingenuous. It's disheartening to see. You know, your goal is to inform your fan base. Like, this is the score if you can't watch the game. This just happened. Bob Carrington made his buzzer beater. If you couldn't watch, I'm here. That's why you follow me. Here's the video, no less than a minute or two after it happened. But they don't do that. I think it's on purpose, and that really rubs me the wrong way. So I had to make an award for them. I think they did an awful job, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You know, this isn't, and I'm not trying to call out the people that did the social media work. Like my goal isn't to be mean or belittle those people. I don't know what the agenda is for the team. I don't know what constraints they have, but at the same time, the product that they were putting out on socials wasn't good enough. And you have some people that are listening that might say, Greg, why do you care so much about social media when the team just won 18 games? Like, they've won 32 over the past two seasons, or 33, whatever. Like, they focus on wins. That's all that matters. I get that. But social media is huge. Like, that's a big part. And every team can, you know, somehow get it right and understands how to do it. And I just find it hard to believe that the Wizards don't know they should post the score graphics immediately. Don't know that they should post the game winning buzzer beater, you know, not 20 minutes after the game. You know, I find it hard to believe that none of this is on purpose, and it kind of rubs me the wrong way. So I have no other choice. I'm not having fun naming this award, but it is what it is. The Wizards get the worst social media team in the league by far as well. So, you know, just nothing fun about it. Pretty bland, kind of going through the motions because they have to, not because it's fun and they get to. And that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Other than that, I mean, I'll go through these awards quickly because we're getting up on an hour here, and I don't like making these episodes too long. I'm going to run through a couple of the best moments that I saw from this season. For me, number one was Jordan Poole's game winner in Denver. That was kind of consensus among Wizards Twitter as well. I mean, what a phenomenal shot to just say, you know what, we have this play, but they've been playing off me, and I think they're going to play off me here again, so just make sure you get me the ball. And I'm just going to shoot it if they leave me open. And he shot it from like 35 feet, nothing but net. Wizards win a phenomenal game in Denver against the fourth seed in the West. Like, it was a really cool moment in the season. Really cool moment for Jordan Poole to get the love from his teammates and all that. So really, really nice stretch and clearly the best moment of the year. For me, I also have here Bilal's triple-double in the first game after Kuzma was traded. That was great to see his floor game, you know, passing and finding his teammates, rebounding the ball, but also, you know, finishing around the rim, draining threes. It was the best game of his young career by far. So, you know, shout out to Bilal for that. The Bub 32 point performance was really cool to see. Knocking down 7 of 10 from 3, could not miss. Just a really great effort from Bub Carrington in that game. You got Alex Sarr's 34 against the Denver Nuggets against Nikola Jokic. Jokic isn't the greatest defender, but Sarr couldn't miss. 34 points, really cool to see that. So those two 30 balls from the Rooks was great. Obviously, Keyshawn George had that great game against Golden State. That was cool. The Pistons game where the Wizards went into Detroit, you know, a team that was kind of looking down on them and went in there and beat them, you know, just punked them. And they were down for a lot of the fourth quarter, but they kept fighting. And Keyshawn George draining two humongous threes. Alex Sarr swatting or meeting Cade Cunningham, possibly all NBA Cade Cunningham at the rim, and basically yelling out like, let's go. That was cool to see that emotion, you know, to cap a really cool win for the Wizards in what was clearly the best stretch of the year when they beat Detroit, they beat Denver, and everything was kind of going, you know, upwards before they completely tanked. But I like that game. Poole's game winner versus Charlotte, where I tweeted out, you know, it's going to go to Poole here. It's going to be a step back three. I'd prefer it not to be. And then he shut me right up and drained the step back three. That was a nice moment. And then the last one I have is the deadline for Will Dawkins. And basically, you know, how great he did. And looking back on it, that leads me into the last award, because this one was kind of tough for me. It's the best trade award. And again, it's a good problem to have when you're debating which trade they made was the best. Because quite frankly, I don't think any of the deals they made were bad. Like, I think they were all relatively good, especially now looking back on them. But you have the best trade, and to me, it's between two. It's the Marcus Smart trade with Memphis, and it's the Kyle Kuzma to Milwaukee trade. I legitimately think I saw 50-50. Maybe more people like the Kuzma trade than the Smart trade. But I wanted to make sure I recorded this after the play-in to see what pick the Wizards would get. And now they do get Memphis's first round pick this year. It's 18, 19, or 20. That'll be decided tomorrow, by the way, Monday at 3 p.m. with coin flip. So I'll tweet that out when it's official. But it's hard. You know, I struggled picking one of these. I think the Marcus Smart Memphis trade is slightly better. And I'll explain my rationale here. You get a first round pick. And I can pull up the updated trade because I also tweeted this out, you know, right when Memphis made the play-in. I had this in my drafts for a while because I knew that that this would be pretty remarkable if they did end up getting that first round pick. The Wizards acquire Marcus Smart, Colby Jones, and pick number 18, 19, or 20 in the 2025 draft, a very deep draft at that, in exchange for Marvin Bagley II, who was injured for most of the season and really wasn't a part of this team's future at all, or rotation for the better part. Johnny Davis, who was drafted by the old regime, is a bust, but you know, like obviously Will Dawkins didn't want him. He was not even, you know, a top 12, 13 rotation player on the Wizards this season. They trade him and a 2025, I believe, second round pick. Like, that's all you give out. That's basically two non-rotation guys that aren't parts of your future and a second round pick for Colby Jones, a good young player who showed really good flashes only in year two for the Wizards. Marcus Smart, who bad contract, making $20 million next year. No sugarcoating that, but a great mentor, former defensive player of the year, you know, played tons of playoff games, saw a lot of success with Boston, and is clearly buying into that mentor role on the Wizards, helping out with Jordan Poole's defense, you know, helping out with Alex Saar being more aggressive, you know, at the rim, both on defense and on offense. You know, just going to be a great addition to this team. And the cherry on top is a first round pick in a deep draft. It's a top 20 guaranteed pick. Now it could be 18, 19, or 20, but like all of that, like you arguably got the two better players in addition to taking a second round pick into a first round pick, a top 20 first round pick. And what all it took was taking on a bad contract, which you could do because you're not looking to really, you know, play against the cap. You have space and you can do it as a rebuilding team. It's the ideal trade for rebuilding teams, playing, you know, working on the margins, and the Wizards did that. So shout out to Will Dawkins for that absolute steal of a deal. That's why I got my top trade. The Kuzma one works. You know, AJ Johnson showed flashes. Middleton, really bad contract, but again, was solid. I'm sure I'll play a decent part next year. If you maybe can trade him, that would make it better. I think the main part was people didn't really like Kuzma. Didn't think he was having a good year. They were just kind of glad he got traded. I don't necessarily think the return on that one was what people were happy about. I think it was the fact that he got traded, and I had to separate, you know, being happy that they were able to move on from him and get a little bit of value versus which trade actually was better for the rebuild and brought back more value. And so to me, with that breakdown, the Memphis trade pretty much clearly trumps that of the Bucks trade. And so while I do like that trade, you know, Memphis won, that outweighs it and takes the cake for me. So that is my final award. My best trade of the season is the Memphis Grizzlies Washington Wizards trade surrounded around Marcus Smart. And that's going to do it. I think this is probably by far my longest episode, but I wanted to get everything in here as possible. You know, discussing Jordan Poole for MVP, Saar Rookie of the Year, George Depoy, Most Improved Champagne, and then a bunch of other fun awards that we got to go through, some best moments. That's going to do it for this episode. Thank you for all you guys that responded to my tweet asking for your ballots, because that was really actually helpful in me crafting mine and kind of seeing where consensus lied in relation to what I, you know, was probably going to go with anyway. So again, thank you for those responses. Let me know what you think about my awards. If you like them, if you hate them, I don't really care what you think, but we can have some fun dialogue about it at least. So DMs are always open. You can always comment underneath the link that I tweet out for this pod, and I'm, you know, happy to respond and discuss whether you agree or don't. So again, thank you guys for listening. That's going to do it for this episode. In terms of the future, we'll know on Monday whether the Wizards have pick 18, 19, or 20 with the coin flips. Again, that's Monday at 3 p.m. And we'll also know if they have pick number 39 or 40, which is the Phoenix Suns second round pick. They have a tiebreak coin flip between them and Portland. So it'll be, you know, those two picks that the coin flips realistically dictate. So be on the lookout for that. I think sometime this week, I'll probably record an offseason preview episode, you know, kind of looking ahead at some, you know, ideal situation scenarios, the lottery, all that type of stuff, free agency, key dates and stuff. So, you know, again, be on the lookout for that. But that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you guys for always sticking with me. Thank you guys for your continued support. Thanks for listening. That's going to do it for this one. Go Wiz.